But yeah. You know, one thing that I do like about the program, and that is like it's a great equalizer of people, you know, like I've been to lots of speaker meetings, different things where like there's local celebrities that are talking.
Yeah.
You know? And they're not put on a pedestal by any means.
No.
Because they're just considered.
Hey guys, that's just a little tidbit from Shannon Burness, who is our guest on Kaleidoscope Wednesday with Ryan Hockey in this episode. To let you know, the title sponsor for today's episode is once again the Yatra Trauma Center here in Krabi, Thailand, where I reside. The reason I'm in Thailand in the first place was I got to experience their residential treatment program for trauma. Absolutely transformative experience. I was introduced to internal family systems therapy, EMDR therapy, and cognitive behavioral therapy. And all of this was done with this kind of interesting cadence where the things that I was taught to take with me after, you know, the actual clinical therapy, there was meditation, yoga, Tai Chi, trauma release exercises, TRE. That's a totally different foreign idea to me. That one was, I never heard of it before. They do all of this in such a way that it's formulated, but it doesn't feel formulated, and it's busy without being chaotic. It's just the most wonderful experience. So check them out, guys. They are a clinic run by clinicians, not a business run by businessmen. And they know that where addiction is a smoke, trauma is fire. And you can learn more at theyatracenter.com. That's YATRACENTRE.com. So check them out, guys. You might just find some value.
Hello, everybody. Watchers, listeners, supporters of all kinds. Welcome to another episode of Kaleidoscope Wednesday on the Ashes to Awesome podcast. I'm your host, Chuck LaFlange, checking in from Krabi, Thailand. I don't know why I had to pause there.
Yeah, I really didn't think about that. Your GPS out.
I guess so. Joining me in virtual studio halfway around the world from Mission, BC, Canada, is my co-host, Ryan Bathgate. How are you doing today, Ryan?
I'm good. I'm old. So I'm on a treatment for antibiotics right now, and it's just devastating me. It's like I got 4 days left. I'm counting each pill. Like, come on. And I get anxiety right before I have to take them because I know it's going to hurt for 4 hours, you know?
Oh,
But other than that, like, I also have this. So this bacteria is like took my energy away for apparently like 6 years. And so I'm starting to get a new energy back that I haven't had since I was in my 30s. So that's kind of cool. I don't know what else is attached to this thing, but I've been carrying it for a long time, apparently. And the immune system doesn't fight it for some reason. So
awesome.
Yeah.
Joining us is our guest, Shannon Burness, who has been on the podcast a couple times now. We've heard her story. She's been on a weekend ramble with Dr. Lisa and I. And we're here today to kind of unpack some of the beauty in Shannon's story. So thank you for joining us from Okotoks, Alberta, Canada. Shannon, how are you doing today?
Yes. I'm good, Chuck. Thank you. It's been a pretty good Monday. Mm. Not too many bad things have happened today, so that's good.
Cool.
What's Monday's the weather like there?
It was kind of sunny for most of the day, and now it's kind of overcast. But it's probably, I think it's about -2 or something. It's pretty mild.
That's not bad. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think we're 9 degrees today or something.
Wow.
Anyway, interesting. Always interested in weather across the country and other places.
Well, it's 25 degrees here at 7:30 in the morning. So.
I know.
It's a cool, brisk 25 here right now. So this is great scooter driving weather.
Yeah. I'd take that any day of the week. Yeah.
Sweater weather.
Yeah, damn near. Listen, so Shannon, as you know, this is a somewhat of a new format for us on the show. What we've been doing is inviting people on to kind of unpack the beauty in the things that are working in their recovery, in the resilience of the human spirit. Ryan likes to reference quite often. Mm-hmm. So Ryan, I'll let you take it from here and just kind of, if you want to ask a couple pointed questions and just kind of let the thing develop the way it develops. How's that sound?
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So I guess like for me, it's like, I like to start in what's real, you know, in reality. And so like, I guess today, like, I always wonder what the foundation looks like, you mm-hmm. know, when we have a really successful story and ultimately it's a successful existence based on whatever those that definition means to you. Mm-hmm. So my question would be like, what is in the foundation? How did you get there? How did you discover these things? And like, and what does that look like today?
So I discovered most of it. Well, my journey started kind of at an early age because my mom, so I'm in the rooms of AA. That's kind of what my recovery has revolved around. My mother was in the rooms when I was a kid, so that seed was kind of planted. So I kind of knew that they existed. I kind of knew what went on there type thing. And then spent a lot of years just active in my alcohol addiction type thing. And then when I finally felt the need to address that, I tried to just do it. We call it white knuckling, like just quit and be done with it and pretend like you moved on.
Yeah.
But that didn't work that well for me. So I thought I'd try the rooms, and it just really spoke to me. Like a lot of the sayings, you know, they're pretty simple sayings and everybody can kind of relate them to their life and kind of build stuff on, you know, so it really was kind of in the rooms that I started this foundation and learned a lot about myself, which allowed me to expand on stuff that created more of who I am that I wanted to be.
Very interesting you say wanted to be, because I think that's such an important part of the journey is knowing what at least somewhat the destination looks like a little bit, you know what I mean?
Right.
I did want to ask you though, like I share that experience with you having my mother being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous specifically I was, I guess I was about 14 when she went to treatment. But what I discovered is that I never questioned, because she remained sober. And she did that through the death of my sister, which was like mind blowing because I sure didn't.
Yeah.
Okay. And like, so I never questioned that it worked. Did you have the same experience? Like, did you always know that there was a solution there, or did you kind of? Because I mean, I think a lot of people have to figure that out for themselves. You know, like,
yeah.
And I don't think I ever did because I watched it happen.
Yeah. I think a lot of it is, you know, at that young of an age, I think I was probably around the same age, actually 12, 13. I wasn't really aware of exactly what was happening, you know? So it's like, I knew that my mom went to treatment and, you know, she was doing better and there was definitely a shift in the dynamic, but, was that why? What I didn't know what she did in that, that would create that, you know? So I would say, like, I always say the seed was planted, but, I didn't know the work that was put in type thing.
Yeah. And I like that metaphor because it's organic, but, you know, the seed is planted, but you know, it wasn't until really you entered the rooms that fertilization started to happen where it was like, oh
exactly.
You know, like this is okay. And so can you think, and just like, I, you know, I have, it's been a long time for me, but there's things that I heard and, you know, mm-hmm. can you remember some of those, like, things just stuck to you that really helped in the beginning?
Yeah. So I always go back to like the very first day that I walked into a room. It was a big book study. So in a big book study, they read a part of the big book, which is like the book that the founder of AA wrote. And like a lot of the program, well, all of the program is based around that. And they read this part of the book that talks about changing and wanting to change and seeking out different spaces that we would fit in, and then eventually just waking up for the last time to what they call a Four Horsemen. And that was my first reading that I sat through in the room. Oh. And just to
I've never heard that before. What is that?
I haven't heard it in so long.
Can you give us an idea what that is? Sorry, I've never heard that before.
Ah, okay. Yeah, so it's just a So there's lots of, like I said, this is the book that the founder of AA wrote. And so a lot of
the big book, as it were.
Basically, the whole. Okay, so I'll just read it to you quickly here.
Sure.
So it's in A Vision for You. So this was the first reading that I heard. For most normal folks, drinking means conviviality, companionship, and colorful imagination. It means release from care, boredom, and worry. It is joyous intimacy with friends and a feeling that life is good, but not so with us in those last days of heavy drinking. The old pleasures were gone. They were but memories. Never could we recapture the great moments of the past. There was an insistent yearning to enjoy life as we once did, and a heartbreaking obsession that some new miracle of control would enable us to do it. There was always one more attempt and one more failure. The less people tolerated us, the more we withdrew from society, from life itself. As we became subjects of King Alcohol, shivering denizens of his mad realm, the chilling vapor that is loneliness settled down. It thickened, ever becoming blacker. Some of us sought out sordid places, hoping to find understanding, companionship, and approval. Momentarily we did, then would come oblivion and the awful awakening to face the hideous four horsemen: terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair. Unhappy drinkers who read this page will understand. And that was the very first reading that I heard.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, if you know yourself when you are in that space and you hear that, I just thought, wow, these people are speaking my language, you know?
Yeah, and it is a powerful reading, especially the four horsemen being frustration. I'm gonna try to remember that.
Terror.
But it's so applicable. And like, it's funny, like, cause you know, we're talking about, you know, 1936, '37, '38, and then I'll publish in 1939. Mm-hmm. And like this is 50 years before science shows up, really before we had digital imaging of the brain, yet it still captures the soul of it. And I always say, like, there's probably three books to read if you want to understand addiction through the social tapestry. And that's one called The Confessions of an English Opium Eater by Thomas De Quincey, written in the 1700s, I believe. Another one called A New Pair of Glasses by Chuck C, who's a member a long time ago. And then if you ever read Heroin Diaries by Nikki Sixx, that if you could read those three books, you have a good glimpse. And because really it doesn't change, just the people and the surroundings. You know what I mean? It's still the same. I have something. Chuck, you'd be proud of me. Hold on a second.
Okay.
It's a bold statement.
Yeah.
What did I miss?
Oh, nothing.
We're just laughing.
Look at this.
You, not at you. Yeah. Oh, look at that. Hey. Yeah, you know, how old is that one?
Is that yours from when you were in the program?
This is actually my stepfather's, who I named my daughter after, and he died with 35 years, I think. And so this is from his first. This is a original third edition, I think, or second? Third edition. So 1960-something, 1970 maybe?
Wow.
1975. There you go.
That's crazy.
So, I mean, I've had many of these in my life. This is the one that I hold on to because that man meant a lot to me.
Yeah. I have my mom's too, actually.
Right? And like, yeah. So like, that to me is another example of this like choice we have as human beings to be able to attach meaning to anything. Mm-hmm. And so this book probably doesn't mean a lot to many. Anyone from AA is like, cool, that's third edition originally. You know, that's cool. But what it means to me is this guy is a guy that put up with all of my shit because of the tenets and the foundation built through what he learned here. Mm-hmm. And the same thing.
Well, and that's what, you know, I was going to speak on a little bit as it becomes a foundation. Like you're talking about building foundations. Yeah. Like, there's people that think this is the is all be all of, like, this is the only way, right? And I don't believe that. I believe that whatever, I'm about recovery, however you define that type thing. And, you know, if you ask me what worked for me, I can tell you what worked for me, and it's not guaranteed to work for you. So, you know, that program started teaching me how to live my life authentically, respectfully, you know, to the relationships in my life and stuff like that. But with that, I started realizing that I need professional help, right? I started surrounding myself with alcohol-free podcasts, reading books, you know, that sort of thing. So I just like flooded me with like-minded people, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, so you built a support network. Mm-hmm. Extremely important, right? Like,
yeah.
And, you know, it even says in here to seek outside help. You know, it tells us in the big book, in the text. And so I'm obviously a big proponent of that myself. But it is interesting that you just said respect. And there was another word there.
Authentically and respectfully.
Right. And you talked mm-hmm. about, I heard rhythm, about being mm-hmm. in concert with life in motion as it's happening, you know, not mm-hmm. being an observer of my own experience. And so that to me, that these are the elements of the foundation we're talking about. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, when we look at, we get to a point where it's not just about not being sick anymore, but it's also about who do I want to be. And I love that you said that in the beginning about building mm-hmm. the person I want to be, because ultimately that is the freedom that we all embody, whether mm-hmm. we know it or not. And we can choose to do, but it takes action. You know, right. I can't just say I'm an astronaut until I leave the solar system. I'm not, or the Earth. I'm not an astronaut. You know what I mean?
Right.
But I can go tell people that, you know, and so like, it's the same thing with being honest or whatever. And, you know, I think that it's mm-hmm. important like to also remember that we are human and that sometimes I'm not going to be always honest. And sometimes like for me, it's like ego. And like, I get a real fear around this sometimes, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, but how does that apply to the foundation? You know, how do I take fear and use the foundation to turn it into something, again, another seed of hope or whatever, you know? And so I'm kind of interested, like, do you find yourself in a place of inspiration or are you, you know, and not to be too specific, but are you like sponsoring or doing anything like that?
Yeah, I have sponsored. I'm kind of like organically moving towards more service work in like speaking at treatment centers or becoming part of like actual work to help people. Do you know what I mean?
I do, yeah. And I, you know, it's funny because there's kind of a split in the road at some point. Mm-hmm. And I notice that you get guys that go and you kind of follow your spot. I should say I followed my sponsor and it was more book theoretical. Whereas, mm-hmm. You know, my best friend had a different sponsor who was all about service. Mm-hmm. And it seemed to me like they both
there's definitely those two branches, right? But, you know, one thing that I do like about the program and that is like, it's a great equalizer of people, you know, like, I've been to lots of speaker meetings, different things where like, there's local celebrities that are talking, you know, and they're not put on a pedestal by any means.
No,
because they're just considered, we're all the same when we're sitting there, you know.
Hey, Ashes to Awesome listeners, the following PSA is brought to you by The Phoenix. The Phoenix is not just a gym. It's a community where the real weight lifted is not just barbells, but hearts, minds, and spirits. Whether you're in recovery or simply choose to live a sober lifestyle, The Phoenix offers a range of activities from yoga to hiking, all led by people who've walked a path of transformation. So why not aim higher with The Phoenix? The first membership requirement is just 48 hours of sobriety. Rise from the ashes today and soar with The Phoenix. Hey listeners, let's take a moment to talk about something crucial. Carrying naloxone. This life-saving medication can reverse an opioid overdose in minutes. You might think, I don't need it. I'm not around opioids. But the truth is, you'll never know when you'll be in a situation where you could save a life. It's easy to use, and many places offer it for free or at a low cost. So let's be prepared and look out for each other. Remember, you might not plan on being around opioid use, but you never know when it'll be around you, and you could save the life of somebody that is loved. This is Jared Blaine with the Blacklist Podcast. And remember, you are loved.
No.
So that kind of sparked something for me. I know I've seen, I mean, I saw quite a few famous people in Toronto all with baseball caps pulled down, but what I'm getting at here is that I totally forgot. Service work.
Yes, service work.
Yes. I'm curious, like, I know it's just, it's a mess in here. I'm curious about like how, from a growth perspective or like accomplished, what does service work, what does it do for you? Like, how do you experience that feeling of, because obviously it's great reward, but what is it for you specifically that is rewarding?
So for me, for some reason, it just like, just fills my cup a little bit just to see, because there's all kinds. When you go into like a treatment center, there's the people that are sleeping. There's the people that are, you know, twiddling their thumbs. You know, they're kind of listening, but not really. And then there's like one or two that you just see like a light bulb almost go on, you know.
Yeah.
That is what I really like, you know.
Yeah, I
never talked to them again. Like, there's been the odd person that asks for my number. Hey, when I'm done, can I call you or whatever? And yeah, no problem. And 9 times out of 10, they don't. And you just hope that they found their place. And but, you know, just to even spread hope is what I'm hoping to do, right?
Yeah. And I think that that's exactly what you're doing. And like you said, it's, there's no cookie cutter here. There's, you know, we all have individual experiences that require individual things, but there are some tenets that just, to me, like I've noticed over the span of human beings, that being honest, integral, compassionate, understanding, they all seem to be these foundational characteristics or values that we use in order to like keep that nurturing happening of our, of our spirit. And so can I don't really know anything, Shannon, about you. You know, can you tell me about like what home life looks like
right now?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm married and I have 3 kids.
Excellent.
They are 21, 17, and 9.
So you're out of the woods almost.
I was out of the woods and then
yeah,
got slammed right back into it. And so I'm married to my husband. It'll be 19 years this year. So I have 8.5 years sober and he has 7.5. And, so it's fairly predictable, which is nice. My life's fairly boring, like there's no drama type thing, which I like.
Yes, yeah, it's totally like, it is like when you say predictable, I think you're consistent, and consistency is safe. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, yeah. Like, I think it's such a great, and I used to always say my new adventure is like waking up Saturday morning and going to the driving range, you know, with a clear head, you know, or well, movie night,
exactly.
Or Friday night, you know.
You know how much I appreciate waking up on Saturday and going to garage sales?
Oh yeah, I bet. Yeah.
Like, I never hit a garage sale for years.
Especially on Saturday morning.
Exactly. Yeah. Or Sunday, if they're on Sunday, you know, like it just never happened. And now, you know, we play slow pitch and we have been involved in everything that involves drinking for a lot of years.
Yeah.
And then we quit drinking and we still are, like, we still play ball.
Yeah, me still, too, actually. Whatever. A lot of ball. I used to, but. We got a really cool recovery league here that's probably got, I don't know, 20 teams all in recovery.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And that honestly, in the beginning for me, that was a big, it was a big help. And all my friends that I have today are from that, you know, through recovery and baseball. And so,
that's awesome. But so now, like you say, like with the predictability, you know, previously, you know, our kids would have, we'd all be walking home from the ball field and the party would be at our house after and stuff like that, you know? And so now we like finish playing and we get in the truck and we're just look at each other and we're like, isn't this so nice?
Yeah. Right.
We're just like going home, we're going to feed the kids. We can pick up food on the way home, you know, like, just stuff that, you know, normies just don't even have a clue about.
That's what I mean. It's like, it's the, you know, I did the parties and the, you know, hot tubs on in penthouse suites. And the one thing I didn't do that scared the crap out of me was what I'm doing now, which is having kids, paying a mortgage, being responsible, and hopefully being somebody that, you know, my kids can look up to. I mean, that's the goal.
Yeah.
Mine are 1 and 6, so I got a lot to go. A lot. They're still cute, though, right now.
Well, they still like you. That's what I say about my youngest. He's my favorite because he still likes me.
Yeah, I hear that, too. And like, I don't know. I got 2 little girls, and I know that there are little, you know what's out there like I was. And so I can't buy guns. So my plan is emotional intelligence. I'm going to teach them emotional intelligence and self-respect and just hope.
I know. You know? That's all you can do. I know. That's what we did with our daughter, too. It doesn't help. My husband's 6'7" and however many pounds. He's a big dude. So that kind of helps a little bit with the the boyfriend situation. But
I'm not that
big. You know, that's what we did is I just instilled in her, you know, respect, self-respect. And I always told her, don't forget, you're the prize. Don't be chasing anybody.
Okay. This is a mirror question. Is that how you feel about yourself?
That's an interesting question.
It is, isn't it?
Normally I would have something real smart ass to say, but we just talked about your 6 foot seven.
Quite a high.
So we all went there. Hey, okay.
Yeah. Anyway. I think over time that has evolved to me feeling that way. Right. You know what I mean?
And I asked that because like when you started, that wasn't what you saw.
Oh no.
You know, so to me, it's like, what's happening from what I see outside perspective is that foundation that you've built is actually a foundation for more than just, it holds more than you now.
Right.
It holds a family and that family. Like, I mean, that sounds awesome. Like Saturday, I don't know what day you guys play ball, but like we do Saturday at the ballpark. I bring my Thursday little girl and it's amazing to be honest with you, you know? And so the foundation question is important to me because I think that it's important to know what we're standing on in order to take the next step, you know?
Yeah, I know. And I've always kind of said, if you don't put the work into that foundation, it's not going to work.
Totally. Like it's like the old astronaut thing, you know, I can say that I have a great foundation, but if I haven't built it, then it isn't there. It doesn't exist.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so that, to me, honestly, that's really heartwarming because, you know, you can relate that, you know, come from a place that didn't start like that in my childhood, but it started like, for me, it was like, my mom went to treatment and it was like, yeah, we'll see. She got back. It's like, yeah, okay, we'll wait and see, you know, and all of a sudden we have food, heat, lights, the same telephone number for more than like 2 months back in those days. You know, and that foundation started for me. Now I was already pretty far gone at 14. Like I was already doing all the bad things. But like I said, I knew there was a solution somewhere. So when I was 19 or 20, whenever I started, I went in to my first meeting in Calgary, actually on, it was called the 272 group. Right off of 29th and Center, I think, Northwest.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Might have been right on Center, actually. And I just, like, I knew that this would work. It wasn't a question about that. But what I didn't know was what it was going to gift me relative to the rest of my life and bringing up human beings.
Right.
You know, and like now in my 40s, I'm glad I had them in my kids at in my 40s because they'd be just a mess right now. But I can see how so much has contributed to my ability to see my little girl smile and live happy, you know, and feel safe in a house, which was to me, I never really had that, you know,
right.
Where it was,
isn't that beautiful to give that gift? Like that is awesome.
It isn't, it, there aren't words in the English language to describe what that feels like, to break that, that cycle. And then, you know, I don't know about you, but the alcoholism thing goes on for generations and generations. Yeah. You know, I think I'm every white thing in under the book as far as like being, you know, French, English, Scottish, Irish, Norwegian, Cree.
Right.
I think that's it. No, there's just more. There's got to be more. But it's like the melting pot of alcoholics getting together in a saloon.
Well, and that's so I'm Irish.
Yeah.
I'm Irish, Shannon. A little bit of Italian and a little bit of Heinz 57. I don't know. But so, I mean, Irish, okay. Italian, okay. Plus, just like, how about a temper wine, to throw that in there with your alcoholism?
Yeah, whiskey, wine, and a temper. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, maybe some hands talking. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'll do another episode of the Racial Profiling. That's what my husband used to say.
She sure is little, but she sure is scary.
Yeah, your husband's calling you scary?
Yeah.
That's 6'7". That's impressive. Yeah. Wow.
Right?
Yeah, I got to do a lot of work to be scary. I don't know. Well, that's cool. I mean, I think, like, is there... okay, I'm going to go another way a little bit.
Okay.
So we did talk about a little bit about, you know, outside help, and, you know, I'm not asking for specifics, but how did that enhance your journey? And at what point in your journey did you decide you were ready to go through a therapeutic process or whatever you did?
Mm-hmm. So I kind of feel like when I first went in, I was void of any things spiritually, mentally, you know, all those things that make you enjoy your life or feel like a whole person. I was kind of felt void of all those. So, going in, you know, and I think this might be what kind of makes it successful for newcomers is you see a lot of people when you go in, if you go into the right room, it has to be the right room, that like genuinely laughing, genuinely caring about each other, genuinely interested in what's going on around them, you know? And I hadn't felt that in kind of a long time because I had turned so inwards that I just was kind of grasping at anything that would help me come out of that, right?
Yeah. And there's almost, I can't put my finger on it, but there's a uniqueness to that safety or something. Like if I go onto a baseball team, I don't feel that right away.
Right.
Or if, you know, if I don't know, join a bowling league, I don't know. But anything I do, book club, I'm not going to feel like that. But all of a sudden there's this like permission that happens, and it's like there's a magic in the support system that allows you to be almost okay to be vulnerable with yourself, maybe for the first time, which is like a hard thing to do. And it's hard to look at ourselves at any time.
Oh, yeah, it is. Well, and I mean, we have this pride about, like, I wore my character defects almost as a badge of honor, you know?
Yeah.
And so to go into these rooms and figure out that's what's upsetting me so much, you know, that's what I have to work through. And that I wasn't unique. That was something else for me to deal with. Right.
I could still deal with that. So yeah, I get that. But,
you know,
yeah. So, so you came in void of those things. And then you got some, like, you know, recovery and you know, in the basic texts and the 12 traditions and how those work together to really put it together. But I don't know about you, but, like, I hit a lot of times where I hit year 4, year 5, that, you know, I started to, my arrogance or my, the defects really started to take hold. I can't say that I was working this amazing program. I think I sponsored people for ego, you know, in those days. And so, like what was it? Can you define it? Maybe a year, how far in before
A time frame before I felt like, oh yeah, I need some Not very long, probably. Like a year, because good, I kind of feel like you have that high of rediscovering things. Like, I remember one day walking by my friend's house and seeing a tree in his front yard for the first time that I'd seen every time I'd walk by his house to take my kids to the swimming pool. And it was this one spring, my first sober spring, where I was like, oh my God, that's a beautiful tree. And it was fully grown. So obviously it had been there for a long time, but it had all these blossoms on it and, you know, it smelled nice. And I had just never even noticed it before. So like your first year is full of stuff like that, right?
Pink cloud.
And then when that
for a quick second, if you don't mind. Mm-hmm. That's just you flexing as an alcoholic, because us former coke addicts, we can't smell the tree. We can't. It's done. It's gone. Right.
Yeah. Smells like diesel.
Yeah. 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 So thanks for showing off. And, okay, you know, right.
But
where are we talking about
still
ego?
Still gonna lose my license, so whatever. Right. You know.
Yeah. Okay. Fine.
What you just talked about, Shannon, is something that we talk about a lot, and that is, again, being in concert with the earth as it's spinning, and we're present in our own existence. Like, you walk by that tree every day, and your mind was somewhere else. But in that that moment, it wasn't. It was with the tree. It was where you were at that time. And how often can we say that? Even, I don't know about you, but even now, how often can I say that I'm present in my own existence, you know? And it's probably with practice a couple times a day, you know, but I'm usually in yesterday or tomorrow, which are these fictional badlands, you know?
And, you know, that brings me, like, speaking of that is, so I live with anxiety and panic attacks and stuff like that. And one of my therapists that I saw told me four words that kind of I try to go to regularly, which is right here, right now.
Love it. I love that.
And so if you, like you say, be conscious in the right here, right now, a lot of stuff falls away from you that you're either thinking of or bothered by, you know.
The noise. Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did an episode called F the Noise with the bulldozer. And that's what we're talking about, is like, that's the noise that made you miss the tree.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And like,
right. Yeah. I was probably pissed off at my kids because they were walking too far behind me, or, you know, somebody drove by too fast, or, you know, all these things that are exterior
and just
stimulus that just take you away from that appreciation. Right.
Meanwhile, there's this beautiful tree growing your whole life. And I mean, I had a profound moment like that watching the sunset, and that's like, I don't know about you, but like when I'm going to say from my early 30s on, sunsets to me have been that moment that I can consciously, actively participate in my life by watching something absolutely beautiful, you know? And so I'm watching a sunset in Mexico, and I realize that my human potential is directly correlated to my understanding of the universe itself. In other words, I'm capable of just about anything as big as I can think, because I don't know where the universe ends. And that's the same as my potential. I don't know where it ends. But as long as I have action and I have commitment, effort, environment, and perception in my control, then I can live in this existence that I get to sit down and watch a sunset, or I get to notice the tree. And so I kind of want to keep on this thread a little bit, if we could, because there's a time that therapy isn't a part of your recovery, and then there's a time that both of them are. And can you did you notice that both of those things together have made a solution for you?
Well, I definitely knew, like you say, that I needed to like see professional help, right? And I will say that there was a time where, and even up till now, like, going to meetings and stuff like that just hasn't been my priority, even though I still identify as part of the program. I kind of wasn't as, or still not as consistent about going there, right?
Yep.
But like I have Well, the other thing with professional help is how expensive it is, right? So, I mean, sometimes you got to let that go a little bit.
Yeah.
And I just kind of feel like, I'm going to say this, but it's going to sound rude, but like the free ones that you get from your
EAP and stuff, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I can just like chew them up and.
Yeah.
Twist, you know what twist I mean?
Around. I've just had... Yeah. Oh, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I'm a therapist. Of course. So, I know.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't want to sound like rude or mean or anything like that, or, but I just know I need more than that. Right. So,
well, if it helps, you're on with myself and Chuck. So, you're always going to look good no matter what you say, because we'll come up with something worse, I'm sure. So I wouldn't worry too much about that.
Yeah.
But okay. I certainly agree. I think that, I think there's also a right fit for mm-hmm. therapists as well. And, you know, I'm not going to say, I think that that fit comes easier with a higher training, but not always, you know, and.
Right. So I guess what I'm trying to say is there was a shift to where I felt more value to having professional help than like going to meetings and being in the rooms, you know?
Yeah. But they didn't replace one another.
No, not at all.
You just
Well, and I mean, that's part of like, if we're speaking about what makes a good foundation and what is helps people be successful. I mean, I can only speak to my own, but, you know, I never used any of the meetings as therapy sessions or, you know, I knew that that was just sort of to like lay a foundation of how to live my life type thing. You know, based on those steps, this is how you react in situations or whatever, you know? And I think maybe sometimes a lot of people use it for the wrong reasons or, you know, cause you can have one person that sits in that chair for 20 years and never gets the message. And you can have somebody that sits there for 3 months and gets the message. Right.
Yeah, certainly. And I think, you know, furthermore, it's almost like, you know, I guess, I like to use the word universe, but you know, like, it's almost like it was, God had this plan and this is mm-hmm. the way it was supposed to be. And like, you know, and I had to go through the things I had to go through to figure out who I was. And, and you know, so I don't, that's not something I ever want to question. But having said that, you say, I'm going to reference something I don't typically like to, but the time. So I just want to say, like, you know, I know what 8 years is, and mm-hmm. and that's amazing. You know, like, that is not an easy thing to do, and I know it's not just you, mm-hmm. but there's a whole support network and people that have invested in that as well. And you know, like, we do that to make ourselves better, like. You know, everybody that goes and sits in the seat, they help someone to help themselves. And it's nothing wrong with that in any way.
Yeah.
But it is really cool to see, like, how this, you know, sober family functions and how the foundation has really, like, you have broken the cycle. You know, there's the, mm-hmm. there's, I don't know what, if you're aware, but like 50% of, addiction is genetic, and then the other 50 is usually social or you know mm-hmm. social influence. And so what you've done is at least taken away that 50% that is in the gray area. You know, there's nothing mm-hmm. we can do about genetics, but
right,
but I mean, you know, when I first heard that, I first thought, oh, 50%, man, I'm screwed. But then I thought about it and I was like, well, this is another whole 50% to play with.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And yeah, so that's
true.
That's really cool for me to hear that your kids are experiencing, you know, really the way the cycle breaks. And then ultimately, mm-hmm. what if, and I like to dream, but, you know, what if down the line there's like, oh, 200 years ago, our family had addiction problems, but, you
right,
know.
Right, because wouldn't that be amazing?
Right? And like, mm-hmm. we, you know, like I trace addiction all the way back to anywhere I can find my family. And I'd mm-hmm. like, I'd be cool if my daughter's granddaughters could trace it back to me.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, that would be amazing.
I think.
That'd be amazing, you know?
Yeah, I think
Well, let you know when my youngest grows up, because he is a product of just the 50%.
Right. Oh, right. Yeah, yeah, right. Because the other, right.
The other ones are 21 and 17. Yeah.
So. But I mean.
But yeah, you know, but I'm there if something ever comes up for them. And I pray that we have a good enough relationship that they feel like they can come to me if they feel they have a problem, you know?
Yeah, I think what you said there, it's really, really powerful and carries a lot of weight. And it's really simple that I'm there. And, you know, like, I don't know, can't speak for anyone else, but I mean, I've had some abuse, but I think that the most hurt I experienced was the neglect, you know, of growing up in a household of addiction. And, you know, it's not to blame anybody, but ultimately I'm pretty sure I knew loneliness before I knew love. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, and that's certainly not anything I want for my little girls.
Yeah, that's so rampant in households that we grew up with that, you know.
Yeah, but it, you know, I think doing things like this, you know, is our drop in the bucket. You know, who knows? Maybe somebody listens to this and takes that and focuses on presence in their home. Maybe not even addiction issues, maybe just presence issues, you know?
Yeah.
And so hopefully that, you know, what we're doing here impacts people. And,
well said. Well said.
This
well said.
Chuck, you going for another record of quiet time or?
Well, I said this in the ramble last weekend here. We did an episode on parenting and recovery. It was kind of an impromptu thing. And I found myself saying almost nothing. And to me, that's a great episode because, like, let's face it, people are going to get tired of hearing me talk at some point. But I'm picking up, you know, and I'm listening. And sometimes that's what we're best served to do, right, is just to listen. And the conversation you guys are having is wonderful. I'm not a 12-stepper, right? And it's not because I have anything against this, because that's not where my journey went. But so to hear what you guys are talking about to me is truly informative for me, right? So that's why I'm shutting up through it. And, you know, it wouldn't be me if I didn't jump in with the odd smart ass, but that's just who I am.
Yeah. True.
All of that said, you guys, we are getting to the mark now where, you know, we've all got things that we've got to get on to doing this evening for you guys today, for me. I'll admit, I'm going to take this little bucket to the beach. And that's on my list.
You're going to the beach. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Poor guy.
Hey, I worked most of the night, 25. So I'm allowed to, right? You know? Yeah. Right.
Well, you know, Chuck, I want to say that that's what I like about your platform is it's a safe space for people of all platform, or what am I trying to say? Like anybody that has any recovery form of recovery methods can come here and feel safe to share it, right?
Absolutely, right? Yeah, and I take a lot of pride
exactly
in that. I do, right?
You know,
I do. I think it's unfortunate that
might be the best compliment that the show's got.
Right.
Like
I mean, people comment on my voice and looks that I have too. I'm just saying, folks, if you're going to drop something in the comments, but no. Yeah. No, yeah, of course it is. I was saying that I'm not a 12-stepper. And I think my journey over the last, we're coming up on a year since the podcast has been out. The 27th of this month, actually, will be since I started. What I've noticed is a tendency for 12 steps to be villainized by some, or not maybe villainizes. Well, yeah, I villainize is the right word, by some. I think that's the far extremes. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, millions and millions of people have been helped with 12-step programs. Millions. It's by far the most, you know, prolific thing in recovery, and it's kind of the go-to. And personally, I feel like, well, I know my first 30 days doesn't happen without it. There's no way. Right. And, it, you know, I went to do different things. My path took a different course after that. It was more about logistics than anything. It's a beautiful thing. The fellowship part for me, I'll tell you what, if they had a meeting in Krabby, I would be there in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. Right. Just to find other people in the same mindset as you. Right. And there are zero meetings here. AA, NA,
well, and I think lots of people will go into.
Go ahead.
Yeah. But I mean, I think lots of people, and talking about the villainizing of AA 12 steps, lots of people can go into one room and have a really bad experience, and that they identify all of AA as that, right? But you know, there's this saying that we always say is like,
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, there's this saying where it's like, take what you need and leave the rest. And it's like, I don't have to care that that person was mad about something. I don't have to care that they disagreed with somebody. Like, that's not my problem, you know, but I'm here to learn how to be a better person.
And I think if you're new to it, as was I, so, and I'll tell you where my journey with 12 step ended was I found a resentment, but that I think with the benefit of a lot of hindsight now and living, eating, shitting, drinking, breathing recovery for the last year that I've been doing this, and a lot of self-introspection, that had more to do with me looking for resentments than it did for the, you know, and so for a newcomer to come in, find a resentment, is such an easy thing to do, right? And I hope that maybe this part, this message gets to, if you find something that doesn't work for you, go to another meeting, you know, and if that one doesn't work for you, go to another one, like whatever it takes, right? I think there's, you know, different people in different rooms are going to give you different results, right? You know, the Al-Anon non-Anon bunch gets a bad rap that way. Sorry, Ryan, go ahead. Yeah.
I was just saying, I think we learn early to take whatever we're feeling that we don't like and put it into something, and that it's really easy to do is to put it into resentment, because that's something we know how to do. What we learn in that journey is about humility and acceptance and all those things that are foundational pieces. But we, you know, it's like a fish doesn't know he's in water until they leave water. Like, we don't know how fucked up we are until we start to look at how actually, you know, we start doing a 4 and a 5 and a 6 and a 7 and an 8 and ultimately a 9, which is my favorite. I think it's just natural for us to, from social programming, to take something and put it into anger. Like, especially as men in North America, that's what we learn how to do with our emotions, is turn it either into anger or into, you know, excitement. But there's a whole wheel of emotions that don't get addressed, is my point. And then we learn that as we go through. I know you're trying to wrap it up here.
It's more about your guys' schedule than it is about mine. So,
Well, like, Shannon, it's been, it's really cool. That the product of commitment, the product of investment or commitment, effort, environment, and perception, and your life has become this really, to me, like, really cool. It's what I'm trying to do, you know, with my family. You managed to do that by building this process. And like, we know nothing comes easy. And then a lot of tears have gone into where you are right now, in a lot of struggle, but I think we get to a point that's like, shit, yeah, that, you know, it's worth it. You know, I see my little girl smile, I'm like, yeah, it's worth it. Yeah, it is. All that shit I went through.
Yeah.
So thank you. I just really want to thank you for your showcase of, again, resilience of the human spirit, and you know, and your love for the gift of life. Which is obvious and apparent in how you speak and how you talk about what you built. So I appreciate you.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you for that. That's nice words. Thank you.
Thank you. Good stuff. Canadian standoff.
That is a...
You're welcome.
Oh, no. I've never heard that. What do I do before. With that?
Oh, my gosh. That's wonderful.
Just say thank you again.
Thank you. Yeah.
I've never heard that before. That's going to make it real right there. That is. Yeah, for sure. Okay.
You're welcome.
Listen, guys, that takes us a quite nice segue into my favorite part of the show. That is the Daily Gratitudes. Shannon, chivalry not being dead yet. We will start with you. What you got for some gratitudes?
Today I am grateful for, yesterday, actually. So I had a really good weekend. So I'm grateful for having a good weekend, spending time with my kids. We did 3 hockey games in the weekend. One of them was the Hitman game yesterday. So I took my son my husband and my son and one of his friends, and just to see the magic of watching professional athletes play in a sport that he loves watching was pretty special. So that's still sitting with me today for sure.
Very cool.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I actually, years and years ago in another life, moved Brett the Hitman Hart. There's a whole story there, let me tell you. I'm not going to get into it on this platform, but yeah. Ryan, what you got for some gratitudes? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I should be ready for these.
You would think.
How about compassion and forgiveness? And those that seek to understand. And then, of course, my girls. Yeah.
All three of them.
Even Pepper, my dog's a girl. I live in a household of girls.
That's really nice. Yeah.
So there's a small, silly gratitude. My toilet paper budget. It occurred to me this morning that being a single guy, I don't have a toilet paper budget. I've literally used two rolls in 2 months. And I'm like, that's because I don't live with women. So being single has its ups, and that's, you know, right. That's it right there. Right. Yeah.
Oh yes. I'm sure Ryan understands that.
Yeah. We both enjoy
it. Oh, I've lived in a house full of women. I get it. Right. Yeah. That's a lot of what? What are you talking about? Right. So I use, as a bachelor, I can survive on gas station toilet paper. I could just like roll a bunch up at any gas station I was at and it would be good. Right? I never bought it for like 10 years. Right. It was, So anyway,
there's a silly gratitude. There's a comedian that does a clip. Hold on. Women do this with toilet paper and men do this fold thing. And it's so funny. Man. It's like they use one square. Women use like 40.
It is,
I also live in a country with butt guns.
Enough of the potty talk.
That affects the now that we're doing it, butt guns. I hear you don't flush toilet paper, right? It's not a thing that you can do in Thailand. So we have butt guns. Like literally everybody has a hose.
Same with Mexico. Toilet, I was just in Mexico. They don't flush.
They don't flush it, right? So way less toilet paper, right? Because it's just there to dry off with, right? So anyway.
Sure.
Now that we've covered that.
It's not my favorite.
I don't know if I'm going to make a real
attitude. Going into those washrooms, we went to this ball game in Mexico.
Yeah.
And there's like a trash can in each stall where you put your toilet paper. As a Canadian, I just was like, ugh. But you know what? They don't think anything of it because that's just how they grew up. And we're just like.
But they don't have the butt guns there then?
What? No? I have to put it in there? Yeah.
Yeah, I feel sorry for the guy with that job cleaning those out.
Yeah, so here it's very different. So, Anyway, okay, that devolved rather quickly.
I know, but you know, it's good to learn.
I apologize to the audience for that. Yeah. Listen, for myself, past toilet paper budget or lack thereof.
Exactly. Okay.
Stop it. You guys behave. Okay. Past the toilet paper budget. I am also grateful to Shan for coming on for another episode. I do love having you on the show, Shan. I do. Right. Yeah. The focus so often now is with these big content creators and, you know, it just happens that way. The show kind of evolves that way. And the thing about yourself is you've just got this real authentic thing about you. There's no questioning it. There's never any motive. There's nothing to push. There's not another brand to promote. I just love having you on because you're just so genuine. And I really do appreciate that about you. So,
that's really kind.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's very true. I just call them as a season.
I appreciate you guys too, you know, for having me.
Yeah. Okay. It's my gratitudes now. You could have said that earlier. You didn't. It's mine. Okay. So just I'm kidding. I'm just talking tough. I'm sorry.
Next time. Thank you.
I totally shushed a guest. Yeah. Oh my God. I'm going to podcast hell.
You did.
I'm also very grateful to every single person who continues to like, comment, share, support, watch, whatever, listen, do all the things, the buttons down at the bottom. Every time you do any one of these things, you're getting me a little bit closer to living my best life. My best life is to make a humble living, spreading the message. The message is this. If you're in active addiction right now, today could be the day. Today could be the day that you start a lifelong journey. Reach out to your friends, reach out to a family member, call into detox, go to a meeting, pray, go to church. I don't care. Do whatever it is you have to do to get that journey started, because it is so much better than the alternative. And if you have a loved one who's suffering an addiction right now, just take the time to listen to this. You just take one more minute out of your day and text that person, let them know they're loved. Use the words.
You are loved.
Him. That little glimmer of hope just might be the thing that brings him back.
My body's getting cold. Another day, and I'm not scared to go. It will be okay. I'll find you another way, and I'm not scared to go.